This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 123. The sisters visit the 24th and a half century.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to yet another episode of the ESH podcast, folks.
Yes, welcome, welcome, one and all.
How do you do?
That funky voodoo that only you do.
So well. Or swell. I can't remember. It's one or the other. Yeah, yeah.
So what's the business? Let's go to the business.
The business. Besides the fact that magic is still MIA, is you got to keep hitting us up on the website, www.electricsisterhood.com. We have some things that are in the works, so there are updates coming. Keep your eyes peeled. While you're there, if you can't remember that we write stuff and we put podcasts up and pictures and all kinds of other voodoo, you can use the short address, which is
ESH.mobi. That's ESH.mobi. The short address will bounce you to the long one, and you can check any articles that are on our site for that week, and you can comment on them thusly. If you want to just talk to us directly, you can use the hit us up link. If you're not listening to us on iTunes, you can check us out there because we happen to be there. You can put us into any RSS reader. That's another way you can find us. You can plug us into any... Oh... My brain just went blank. You can put us into any podcast search engine. That will pop us up too. And if you're one of the cool kids, you're probably listening to us on the All Games Network.
Our show airs on the All Games Radio Network Monday nights, 9 p.m.-ish Eastern, 6 p.m.-ish Pacific time. You can catch our show there as well as a bunch of other great shows like Super Happy Fun Time Show, Dead Pixel Live, Fantastic Forum, Ultimate Quest. I mean, there's all kinds of great, great entertainment over there, including us. So you should definitely check that out at allgames.com. That's the majority of the business that I have. Like I said, there are updates coming. We've been busy. Been talking to people. We got people. Crew's growing. All that good stuff. So be on the lookout. Other than that, I'm going to take the mic of 1,000 Truths, which right now looks like a double stuffed Oreo cookie. Because I can't think about pie. Yeah, I can't think about pie right now.
I don't want to think about your pie either.
I wasn't having you think, you know what, that's just disgusting. There's no way, no place that I can go with that isn't going to wind up being just an awful, awful sound bite. So I'm just going to stay far, far away from that. You dirty, filthy bitch.
I'm not filthy. Oh. Oh, it's really funny. As a little side note, Hot Mess got me this little bumper sticker I would put in my car. And it looks like a girl with, you know, thick rim glasses, and she's got a bob. And underneath it, it goes, I'm flirty, dirty, and nerdy.
Well, that sums awesome. You up very well. It's actually very apropos.
I thought so, too.
Hot Mess does have some good taste every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. So, without further ado, you may take the Oreo of 1,000 Truths. What are you going to do with it? Don't lick it, because I already opened it and licked it and called dibs on it.
Not ew. I'm not going to lick something that you lick.
Well, you didn't know that I licked it until I told you.
Well, I wouldn't have put it in my mouth or anything like that. But anyway, with this mic.
This is going to so many wrong places.
With this mic, I think what I wanted to talk about today was, firstly and thusly, a very good movie.
Can you
movie.
Do me a favor? Can you stop saying thusly?
What's wrong with thusly? I like thusly. Thusly, I never shove thusly up your thusly ass thusly.
One, it makes you sound pretentious, thusly.
Thusly, I am awesome.
Thusly make me want to punch you in thou face area.
Mm.
Indeed.
Anyway. Okay, fine.
Thank you.
First and foremost, a movie has just finally come out on DVD. And we've talked about it once before, but only in generalities. And this is back during the Magic Mystic
era where magic actually showed up for recording.
Yes. Mm. And the thing about this movie is that I'm not even going to go about, you know, giving you a synopsis of the movie.
Thank you.
I'm just going to talk about why all of a sudden it seems that all these Japanese and, you know, other cultures, when they shift from a book to a movie, that the attention on it is so much more positive than when here in the U.S. we take a really good book and we turn it into a movie, and only, you know, through the graces of either a really great director or a great screen, you know, someone who can adapt well, turns that great book into a decent, not always necessarily the best movie, but a good movie. But over there in Japan and Korea and China, they take these beautiful stories and turn them into beautiful movies. And then, to transpose on top of that, let's animate it and revive it into this great piece of art. And they do this all the time. And that's why I think there's a strong pull for graphic novels that then turn into animes. Now, most of the time, the animes don't do very well.
Right.
But then the OVAs come out, which are the original version of the animation, or whatever the OVA actually stands for. And I used to know it.
It's on a glossary.
But the OVA, when it comes out, re-grabs everybody's attention. Or if it was OVA first, everyone's like, oh my god, that'd be a great anime. And then the anime becomes lacking. Like, they bring it up to this level. They put this OVA on a pedestal, as it deserves to be, because usually they're very cinematic, they're very theatrical. You've got this broad concept brought to you in this beautiful form, and then they like jizz all over it in the anime, and you're kind of like, what the hell?
Oh, it's an image I really didn't need, because you know who draws all that stuff, and I just
But anyway.
Ew, heebie-jeebie.
But anyway, this movie, this girl who leapt through time.
Oh, it was that's the name of the movie. I was wondering when you were actually going to mention
it. Yeah, that's the actual title of the movie, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. Just for a general idea, if you haven't figured out from the title, there is a girl.
And does she go through time?
Yes, but it's not like, oh, she does it all the time.
It's not like Doctor Who. She doesn't have a TARDIS.
Right. In the movie, just as a little bit, she finds this like acorny, glowing acorny thing in this lab room. Oh, and she falls on it.
You should never fall on anything gold and glowing.
Yeah.
It's just bad.
And she falls on it. And after she falls on it, there's this mark that shows up on her arm. She doesn't understand what it means yet. And at first, you know, you kind of look at it and it kind of looks kind of tribally, you know, and,
like,
and there's a number.
Tribal tattoo type deal.
Yeah, but and there's like a number ingrained in it, but you don't really see it at first. And at first, she doesn't even realize that she can leap through time. But in the story,
well, obviously,
there are several,
because I wouldn't necessarily equate falling on a golden glowing acorn
and getting a tattoo equivalent to time travel.
Like, okay, and now because these things happen, that means I can go back in time. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she doesn't figure it out until later that she can do that. And eventually, you know, in the story, all these different events happen. You know, and she thinks, oh, if I go back in time and change this, then that will be better. But by doing that, something else goes out of whack. And every time she goes through time, the number within her tribal tattoo thing changes. Not that she's very aware of that yet. Like, she hasn't figured that out yet. And,
have, like, in Quantum Leap, just a specific numbers of leaps?
Yes, she's only got so many. And then after she runs out, everything that's happened, that's it.
Does she hope that the last leap might be the final leap home?
Very funny.
Oh, uh-huh. Come on. Quantum Leap was something.
You're just hilarious.
It was something. I am. If you don't believe me, ask my mama.
And animation, if you liked the animations from, like, Hayao Miyazaki, it actually kind of looks like it's his stuff, but it's not his stuff.
Gets on my nerves when people start biting other people's style, like, blatantly.
No. Because a lot of people get confused with some of the movies that come out because, you know, a lot of people think that anything that looks like Hayao Miyazaki is. There's another guy who used to work with Hayao Miyazaki. So their styles are very similar. And a lot of the times people are like, well, that looks like Hayao Miyazaki, but it must be that other guy. And in this case, I think it actually might be the other guy. I just don't know what his name is.
Somebody should have done their homework.
I know. But I mean, because I've only seen this movie once, and I'm kind of hoping that I'll get it on DVD because I absolutely love it, and I loved it in dubbed. I actually want to see it. I want to see it subbed.
Okay.
And
that's a big thing, saying that you loved it dubbed.
I know. And there aren't too many things that I do like dubbed, but I liked it dubbed.
That's cool.
And it's moving because obviously, you know, it's that classic story of, you know, you can't always get the desired results that you want. And even when you have the chance
to try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need.
Exactly. And there's this futuristic feel to this movie, not only by, you know, the glowing acorn, but there's some time traveling in a different sense, but I'm not going to go into that. And there's a great romantic story. And, you know, it's one of those romantic stories that doesn't end the way that the audience would want it to, but it ends in a way that people are satisfied.
See, the way that you're describing it, it just sounds like a time-traveling, this ugly yet beautiful world.
Because
it sounds maybe. Like it's trying to be deep.
But I mean...
And emotional.
I mean, it is, actually. Because the original story was very much like that. And let me just give you an idea. Like, before, like, when the book came out, like, I believe the book came out, or the books, because I think there's several books. The first book was released, let's see, because I have this written down somewhere.
This is the time when Panda reads the notes. This is the time when Panda reads the notes. Read the notes.
Read the notes.
Read the notes.
November of 1965 was the first time the stories hit papers, hit book.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
So this is, yeah. So thank you. So yeah, thank you, Wikipedia, for helping people like me. But I mean, the story has transcended not from that period of time, and then it came into film in 1983, right before Pandalicious was born.
Mm.
When the world finally got its panda. So
yes.
so great. Yay. Things happened for me.
Yeah, lots of them. 5 years.
Be quiet.
I'm sorry.
But I mean,
but then, I'm past that now. Therapy but really just, works, people.
Look, so I mean, you've got 1965. Then it jumps to 1983.
65 or 75?
1965.
Okay,
was when the book.
75. Okay.
The book.
Okay.
Then the movie came out. The first movie came out in 1983, okay. Right before me.
Right.
Then there was a drama that came out in 1994.
A drama?
Yeah. Like a J-drama.
Oh, like okay. A TV show.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And then, after that happened, there was another film in 1997.
Okay.
It's the same premise.
Okay.
It is the same story. Girl somehow gets imbued with the power to jump through time, only has so many. What will she do with it? Will she be selfish, or will she use it for the common good? And at the end, does she achieve everything that she wanted to achieve? Or, you know, in the end, did all her meddling end up doing the worst damage?
More harm than good.
Yes. And then I think after the 1997 movie, then in 2002, there was another TV made-for-TV movie.
Okay.
And now, 4 years later, comes the animated film.
Okay.
And people have just flocked to it. I mean, there have been hints about it going animated for a while, like buzzing in the anime communities. And some people were procuring it through curious means. And I've been waiting for it to come out on DVD because I'm like, it is too good of a story
to boot
for them not to Yeah, I have too much respect for it. And
well, that's good because bootlegging is wrong and illegal, and we don't condone it.
No, we don't. And I just love, you know, that they can go and pull something from so far back, or not even that far back. I mean, to me, that's far back.
Yeah, yeah, I know, I know. But to you, anything that's, you know, even a day older than you is like dirt and dust.
No,
but my question to you is, because, you know, we were talking about your topic as a Eastern versus Western. Give me an example of a Western book translation to live action translated to animation.
Well, see, that's really funny because not a lot of stuff gets done that way here.
Exactly. When you think about it.
I think they should. I mean, there are a lot of movies that get revived over time. I mean, from what I know and I've experienced in my lifetime, the only types of movies that get redone and get the type of attention that something like this gets attention for are musicals.
Well,
I mean, we've had a boom of revivals, not only on Broadway, but on film.
But that happens in the West, period. That for our entertainment cycles, musicals go in and out of favor. They always have. You hit upon a time and you hit upon a generation that's ready for just a good time, fun time, laugh, sing and dance to get out of your troubles. And so they become all the rage. And then when things are going good and people don't have that need for something to make them laugh and sing and enjoy, they fall out of favor. So musical revivals is nothing new. That's been going on for years and years and years. I mean, Cats has had so many different runs. It's ridiculous. Same thing with Phantom. And then you have your new revivals
like
that are going to
Rent.
You know.
But I mean, and let's look at, let's see. Any movies, I'd say probably from Eshmom's time. Actually, or maybe even before that, because I've been watching some of them. Not that I catch them halfway in, so I never know what the titles are. But I see all these actors and these actresses, and I see them being triple threats. I see them being, you know, not only are they top notch actors, but they're performers.
Oh, you've been watching AMC and Turner Classic Movies, haven't you?
Yeah, and I'm in awe, you know, because I look at these movies and I'm like, oh my God, this has like everything in it. And then I go and watch modern movies and I'm like comparing them. And I'm like, okay,
there's no comparison.
The film quality. Okay. Yeah. For the term, the time and the technology. Yes. I had a brain fart.
Had an internet fart too.
Okay. Well, the technology, you know, yeah, comparable, there's a difference, the change. Okay. But the quality of the type of movie is lacking.
Absolutely. And here's the reason why. And I think that for both fronts, both the translation on the West from novel or graphic novel to live action to animation, or just literally translation from one medium to another, I think the reason why it's not as successful, or at least seems as successful over here, is because of the philosophy of attack. You're dealing with two different philosophies of what is a success. The Eastern philosophy is a success is something that is moving, that is visually beautiful. If it pushes some kind of technology bound, great. But if it doesn't, as long as it tells a story in some rich and cultural way, then it is a success. And that ultimately translates into financial success. That's kind of the impression that I get of the Eastern philosophy. Whereas the Western philosophy, when it comes to entertainment, isn't paramount on telling the story in some way. There are a lot of, and don't get me wrong, there are a lot of directors and there are a lot of cinematographers that want to achieve that. But the major studios go after the final dollar. And success is then driven by, will it have a gangbuster, blockbuster opening weekend? Will it be something that's going to get butts in the seat? Is it going to make back whatever we invest, which we're going to invest multiples of millions overseas, which means we then have to get these high-name-faced actors who may or may not be able to pull off these roles in hopes of getting more butts in the seats so that we can make more money gross. And hopefully that will tell a great story. And if it does, then maybe we'll get an Oscar. So the philosophy behind how projects are greenlit, staffed, is completely different between the West and the East. And I think that's why you have, at least in my mind, such colossal failure with translation from one medium to another on the West than you do on the East. I think that sometimes you also have that same failure when you translate some Eastern stories with a Western flair. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I don't know. I've just been racking my brain over this.
Well, it's because we don't grow talent like we used to. You know, before, if you were to look, and I was actually talking with Evermore about this not that long ago, but if you take a look at how many movies studios used to put out a year, they used to put out over 100 movies a year. They had some A-list movies and then a lot of B, C, and D-list movies. And in doing those movies constantly, because they were literally turning movies around in months, 1 month, 2 months, just shooting the hell out of them, getting them done, it basically became a boot camp for getting good. Before, in order to be a contract player, you had to have the look, you had to have the talent as far as acting and portraying the emotion, but you also had to be able to sing, and you also had to be able to dance. It wasn't a added bonus. It was a requirement. And now, you know, you have a lot of actors that aren't a double threat. Some are barely a single threat.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, we have some sensational actors.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not knocking them. You know, and it's really funny that, you know, if you go down, if you look at all the top A-list actors, a lot of them who have made their solid profession solely acting, that's what they do. But then when you start going down the caliber, like say you go to like a B actor who, yes, acts well enough to be in, you know, one of these Paramount big movies, but might not be the leading role. And then you have to think, well, why are they not at that same type of caliber? And then you find out maybe 3 months afterwards that, oh, they're also working on an album. And then you are curious and you pick it up and they actually can sing. Or they can act, or they actually do something else.
Well, like Zooey Deschanel. Okay. Nobody knows this more.
Oh my god. I didn't realize she could sing
until I saw Elf and I went, oh man, oh my god, oh my Jesus. And
like, she's got a soulful voice. I would never think that would come out of such a petite woman.
Exactly. But, you know, just getting back on topic, even though I love Zooey Deschanel like crazy. I think that if you try to think of something that's gone from some kind of book form to live action to animation, I mean, the only thing that comes close are going to be some of your comic book translations. Because most of those went from comic book, some graphic novel, but didn't necessarily go directly to live action. Some went to animation first, went back as just print, then became live action. But if you think of Batman, you know, Batman went from comic book to some graphic novels. I still think that the Miller Batmans are amazing. And then to a TV series, then to a movie with a bunch of different animated series popping up, which I still think Batman the Animated Series that ran in the early 90s is probably still, at least from my mind, the best animated Batman.
Yeah, I agree.
That I've ever experienced. But that was successful. It had bumps. I mean, the early Batman, the campy Batman, which I absolutely love. Okay. Absolutely love Eartha Kitt. Best Catwoman ever. I don't care what you want to say. Eartha Kitt.
Wasn't going to say anything.
You look at some of the things that are going on now, and really on the West, the only things that have been successful, for the most part, have been those kinds of transitions, you know, and the ones that most people don't realize were graphic novels that went to movies, you know. A lot of people don't know that Road to Perdition, was a graphic novel.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Obviously, Sin City went from graphic novel and went to movie. But it's very rare that those things get translated on the Western side into animation, because I don't think that on the Western side, animation is regarded as a high medium like it is on the Eastern side of the world. You know, for the longest time, even though animation really was designed always as adult entertainment, that it really gets regarded as child's play in the West. I mean, if you think about it, most of the jokes and the sight gags in a lot of cartoons and animated items, especially feature-length film, are designed for the adults in the audience. There's very little that's designed for kids. When you really think about it, Tom and Jerry was not designed for children.
No. And then the movie. They take the best silent duo that we've ever had in cartoons and made them speak.
You know, it's just wrong. And I think that it's just because of the disregard for what the medium really is. And it takes a great feature-length film, or it takes a great animated film from some other country to kind of spark that idea on the Western side that, hey, we can use animation to actually tell some deep and richer stories. And I think that's where you get companies like Pixar popping up and using the computer-generated animation, which is still animation nonetheless, to tell a rich story. If you take any of the Pixar stories and you turn them into live action, they're still going to be funny movies.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get rid of a few gags, like Cars. You have to, you know, change around, unless you make people vehicles. But the story would still remain. And it would still be a powerful, you know, see the forest for the trees story. So I think that it's just in the approach and the understanding that it's different. Like, I am one of the few people that I was not happy with the Lord of the Rings trilogy at all.
Yeah, I only read The Hobbit.
Well, that's okay.
It was one of the good ones.
Yes, it takes a while to get through. But, you know, there was a live-action The Hobbit movie, and there was an animated The Hobbit movie before this. I like the animated The Hobbit.
See, I didn't
it scared
see
the bejesus think, out of me when I was a child.
I think I saw bits of the live action, but I never saw the animated.
Oh yeah, the animated one is probably my favorite, because of Gollum. I think is scariest in the animated Hobbit, because it kind of looks like a toad wormy thing. Just yeah, weirded me out, you know. But I think that so much emphasis is put on box office hit on the Western side. And I don't want to make it out like the Eastern side is all about art for art's sake.
Right.
Because that's not the case.
They have a better grounding in it.
You know, that's not the case. The bottom line is you make feature-length film in whatever medium. You make TV shows in whatever medium in order to make money. But I think that the idea of being financially successful dictates more on the Western side than it does on the Eastern side. And I think that that shows in specifically what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason that if you have something that's successful as a graphic novel, that at some point in time in your mind, it doesn't run through to make it animated.
They should make more things animated.
I mean, if you look now...
Fuck, let's just animate everything.
Let's just animate everything. No, but seriously, if you look now, Watchmen's getting ready to come out as a live-action movie, right? It's a graphic novel. There are a couple of things that you can find on the web where people have actually taken and scanned in some of the pages and some of the artwork of the graphic novels and created a little mini animated series. And I think there's even one on the iTunes store right now that is an animated, I'm doing air quotes here, you can't see it.
Oh, but you did the space where I could totally picture you hunching over doing that. Your tone of voice drops when you do it.
Yeah.
Like, so right now. Quotes,
like, right now. I did air quotes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that you will probably see some more animation pop up on the Western side, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to be in the adult arena. I think that you'll continue to see things like comic books brought to live action, and then depending upon how successful, animated, like Transformers, okay?
Yeah.
Comic book, animated series,
movie.
Finally went to live action, then went back to another animated series, and then a CGI animated series, and then another kind of 2.5D animated series. So I think that we just kind of have an identity crisis of understanding that the medium can be used for more than just the action tale.
Okay.
On the Western side.
That appeases the...
Are you pleased?
I am.
Are you not entertained?
Yes.
Okay.
All in all, maybe eventually...
We can get a Duck Dodgers movie?
Once the West has reached... Once we've reached enlightenment...
Did you say reached in?
Yeah, reached it. When we reached it, enlightenment... Maybe then when we've gotten to that plane, we could try this, because I feel some people would just, and I know this is going to sound very crude, but people would just cream their pants. The demographic of us who are adults, who are still into the animated scene, those of us who are reaching a time in our life where, you know, going to anime conventions might not be
cool?
Seen as, well, it's, for some people it's not cool now, but...
Meanie?
But when you reach a certain point in your life, when you start looking around...
You can go to the anime con, you just shouldn't cosplay. There is definitely an age limit on cosplaying.
See, but when
and
you reach
a certain
age,
limit.
And start thinking about the day that you have children that you'll cosplay...
Man phase wrong. Now, wait a minute. Now, hold on just a second. I think that families that cosplay together are adorable.
I know. And I'm hoping, you know, eventually in that part of my life where I become a mom, because that will happen, that I don't think anime is going anywhere in my life. I think I will have a secret room in my house. Hopefully my husband, you know, he'll have his man room and I will have mine.
Where manly things happen. It's
yeah.
The man room.
And he'll have his man room and I'll never go in there and he'll never come into my room.
You're but such a like, liar. You can't stand a secret. You'll go in the man room.
Yeah, okay, fine. So I'll go into the man room.
But he can't go into the lady room. He has
like,
to stay away from lady
like,
business.
What goes on in that room? I'm like, I just knit.
And yes,
like,
I'm
and he'll
full
come
of shit.
In and it will look like a knitting room, like with pillows. And then he'll leave and I'll press a button and a giant screen will come down and speakers will come down and a secret wall with all of my anime collection will come up. And. You know, or like I'll go into like a secret catacomb. Like I'll have a panic room. That's my anime room.
This is where I go when I panic. Full Metal Panic, to be exact.
You know.
Yeah, I went there. I went there and made that joke. Yeah, brumpunks.
But anyway, like I don't think anime is going anywhere in my life, and I'm worried that eventually, when I have children, that I won't know how to deal with a child who doesn't like anime like me.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like anything. It's
like you see right now, like I can see my kids now going,
dude, your kids are going to love anime. There's no way that your kids are not going to love anime.
I know it's genetic. I can't see it. Not. I can't see it happening either. But in the crevice of my mind, I am worried that I will have like that overly popular daughter, who like, mom, you're like such a loser. Like, how did you have me again? I'm like, you're an
dude,
alien.
If your daughter does that, slap her in the face.
Oh my god,
that'll fix that real quick. Because like, oh if your daughter god, talks to you,
time out.
Because if your daughter talks to you, Valley. First of all, neither one of us has ever lived on the West Coast. So if your daughter starts speaking Valley, smack the bitch in the face. And remind her, this is East Side, motherfucker. Remember right. Who you're talking to. I'm your mother, not your friend. Know your role and quit your bitching.
But anyway, I mean, I have that little worry in the back of my mind.
Yeah, but you can't have that little worry because here's the deal.
Or I'm worried that being the mom, when I have the baby, you know, at that small, impressionable, hey,
why
I'm
are we
the
talking
baby.
About you having kids?
Wait, I'm making a point.
I hope like, so because you keep going around the same loop of what if I have this kind of kid? What if, dude? Don't even joke like that because I will fucking fly up there and slap you in your face.
Oh god! Hey,
I won't hit you in the belly because you might have a baby.
You're never
going to
listen to this, but I'm pregnant. I'm just kidding. I'm not, guys.
Yeah.
I'm not pregnant.
Well, you know what? Somebody probably in the community is going to take that and make a CD and
like,
send it to mom.
I know. Like, dear Esh mom,
there's something I think you need to know.
Play this. No, I'm not pregnant. No, I'm just because you know I've come to notice like a lot of the times when I've gone to conventions and I've looked at the family. Like the makeup of like families that I see at conventions, it's usually like a mom our mom's age and like a kid our kid's age. Like I don't see a lot of little people, but like I see like couples that are around my age that might have that little baby with a little hat thing.
Because the thing that you have to keep in mind is most anime that's good isn't designed for anything other than a preteen.
Yeah,
just like cartoons really. For the most part, aren't designed.
I'm concerned that eventually when I have the, you know, partner in life that helps me procreate a baby, that I'm going to bring the baby to conventions, and the baby's going to grow up going, oh my god, conventions, 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 and then it's going to grow up to hate conventions, and then hate me.
Well, you know, it's just like anything that you would do, so now we've turned into a parenting podcast somehow.
I'm just concerned for the well-being of my baby.
I don't know why you're this concerned. You're weirding me out. Stop it.
I'm sorry.
No, the thing is, you don't overdo it. It's like anything in life. Don't overdo it. If you don't want to burn somebody out on something, you know, it's like if you don't want to burn out on fries, don't eat them every night, every day of your life. Okay. Just because there's a convention doesn't mean that you have to go to this one. And trust me, when you have kids, you're going to be so goddamn broke, you're not going to be able to go to every convention. You may only go to one a year.
Okay?
It's like when we would go to the big New England fair, when Esh Mom would take us to that. We didn't go to fairs all year round, even though there literally was one that we had every year up the block from us.
We went on ice every year up until I grew up.
And became a pain in the ass. But think about it. I mean, we used to have the fair that came up in Minnie Bowl every year. We didn't go to that.
Yeah, that's
we had other fairs that happened in PBD in that little cemetery area. We didn't do that all the time. You don't do everything all the time. You make it a treasured experience that you do every so often. So that way it stays special and it doesn't wear out. When your kids get to the point where they're making their own decisions about what they want to do and what's cool or not, they might want to continue doing it, and they might not. Okay, just like we used to go into Hancock with mom and make cookies for every Christmas.
I love doing
and then
that.
We, you know, got, you know, into high school and we were too cool to get on the bus to go into Boston.
No, I still wanted to go. You didn't want to go.
Bitch, you're so full of shit. I don't want to get up right now. Can I stay in bed? Don't you want to just bring me home cookies? You're so full of shit.
I kind of wish I hadn't done that because those cookies were good.
Yeah, those cookies was the shit.
They were the bomb.
You'd bake like 105,000 cookies in like 3 hours.
We're going to go in and we were going to take the tea in and you got us lost. Though I promised never to tell mom that we actually got lost.
But we finally, you know, got where we were going. It's no big whoop.
Anyway, that was a horrible tangent. I'm sorry I scared you about the baby. I'm not pregnant. It was just a concern.
Don't ever do that again.
I'm sorry.
I'm sitting going, why does she keep harping on when she has babies and she's concerned about conventions and, you know, kids growing up and hating her? What is she trying to fucking tell me? I'm so telling mom.
I'm not pregnant. You don't know that it's so mom. If you go and tell that to Esh mom, I guarantee
she will beat the black
day,
off of you.
No. No, I'll wake up and she'll be on her way to work and she'll be like, there's something in the bathroom. I want you to use it. I want you to call me on my break. And I need you to... I shit you not.
Dude.
And she'll be like, don't you fucking play, Pandalicious.
Hey, guess what? Guess what, Panda? If I told Esh Mom that, she wouldn't go to work. She'd be there in the bathroom with the stick.
We're going to the hospital right now. I'm like, what?
She'd be like, bitch, put your clothes on and get in the car.
Yeah.
Where we going, mommy? Just... get your clothes on and get in the car.
We're going right now.
We're going right
now.
Thank you. Okay, so now that we're done talking about...
I wanted to talk about it.
Having kids and stuff. We're going to leave the parenthood podcast now.
I'm a cancer, for Christ's sakes. We think about stuff.
Well, you know what? Stop it. Just stop it. Obviously, you and thinking don't necessarily always make a good match.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
so
I'm taking the mic now
because you obviously can't hold it any longer because Lord Jesus knows what you're going to speak about next.
I'm sorry.
I'm really, really afraid for your sanity. I don't know where that came from either, but please put it back and don't ever go in there again.
Sorry.
Okay. So I'm actually going to talk about a couple of things. We were asked a couple of questions, and I finally actually got around to writing them down so I would remember to answer them.
Okay.
And
What are they?
Well, actually, these two that we're going to talk about actually came from the same person. So, Jarell, we're actually answering your questions. So
we
the first
start,
one...
We get mail from people. We should just read them on the show.
Well, you know, the thing is, we do get mail, and I ask people to read it and to let me know what they think about it.
I do read it, I just forget to respond to it.
Yeah, or tell me that you've read it.
So, no, that...
You know, that communication thing needs a little bit of work.
Yeah.
So the first question was, do we belong to the ECA? So, first of all, the ECA is kind of like the ESA, except... where the ESA is more about members that are in the industry. So developers, publishers, game sellers, and as well as companies that make all kinds of electronics, computers, personal media players, everything electronic. And as an organization for those businesses, the ECA is more designed around the consumer side. So it is the Electronic Consumer Association or advocacy or whatever they want to say the A is for this week. But it's designed mostly around the consumer base. So they ask for consumers to become members, mostly focused around gamers because there's been a lot of things going on politically that have threatened to stifle games being released, content in the games being changed, and really a form of censorship. And so my big thing that I take away from the ESA is that they're very committed to gamer as lifestyle and that it's not anything to be ashamed of, that it is a medium for all kinds of cultural and artistic creativity and expression, and they should be protected, which I agree with. But we are not members of the ECA. Mostly because the first few times that the ECA was brought up to me specifically, it was brought up with the guise of, hey, if you pay this month, this money for a year of membership, you can get discounts at these places.
I like discounts.
I like discounts too, but, you know...
it just wasn't enough to say, okay.
No, well, here's the thing. If you're going to position something to me where... the dues, what I'd be paying the membership money for, was to support newsletters like Game Politics or Gamer Jobs as a gamer and being part of the community and supporting advocacy on behalf of the gaming community, then hell yeah, I'd fork over my bucks. But it really wasn't until this year that anytime I'd been to an event where there was an ECA booth, it was presented as anything more as if you pay the membership for the year, we'll give you a t-shirt and you get a card and you get discounts at like GameStop.
Okay.
I mean, it basically was presented to me on the level of getting a Starbucks card.
All right.
And so there wasn't anything motivating me to wanting to become a member. Now, this past PAX, I actually was able to be part of the audience when we had the founder and CEO of the ECA come and speak. And I got to speak with him a little bit after the interview and now see the side of what it is that they're trying to do. So they definitely now seem more focused. So does that mean that I would probably become a member of the ECA? Yeah, I probably will. Especially after Christmas when I get my Christmas money. Yeah, what's up, Christmas money?
Christmas is coming. And hopefully this year it will be a white Christmas.
Why gotta be white Christmas? Why can't it be a black Christmas?
Well,
I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from. I was channeling Chris Rock. I'm okay now.
No. Because last Christmas we didn't get a lot of snow, so it was kind of green. So it was a green Christmas. But, you know, Christmas isn't Christmas without snow.
Christmas isn't Christmas without Christ. Wait, where'd that come from?
Oh, I don't know.
The Roman Catholic schooling.
Put the book down. Put the HB down.
Yeah, yeah. There's all those Catholic nuns smacking you in the head with the ruler.
It's not. It's like it's
out.
Not Christmas without the mass, without the more.
It's not Christmas without the mass.
The mass.
Anyway. Oh, those nuns scared
Spiritus
with Jesus.
Santo.
Okay. Anyway.
Oh God!
Oh no! No! Stop it! Do you know how long it took me to try and forget all the Catholic schooling?
I know you went to Catholic school. I are not.
Yeah.
Which is why I didn't go.
Yeah.
And look how well I turned out.
Exactly. Moving on.
I'm awesome.
Dude, you laid the foundation for that one. I merely walked across it.
Yeah, I like to lay down foundation.
You're just asking for it now.
I knew that was bad. I still wanted to say it.
There's like very little hope for you. I really don't know what to say. But I
can't help it. I am just a poor victim of circumstance.
You're not a victim. Do it to yourself,
so
you're not a victim.
You cannot victimize
yourself.
Yes, you can.
I don't want to know about it. Moving on.
Are you not listening to the show?
I'm not listening. La, la, la. Okay, so back to my point. I will probably join the ECA this year. I think that there is enough going on there now that as an advocacy group that it definitely, definitely warrants support. I think GamePolitics.com is a great website, and I think that people, whatever age, that if gaming means as much to you as it does to both of us, that being part of positive groups and associations absolutely is something that you should do as a gamer.
Okay.
You know, it's like with anything. If there's an association around something that's near and dear and true to your heart, you should definitely support it, as long as it's positive. You know, the ECA is not out to hurt anybody. Does the ECA get along with the ESA? No, not exactly.
They like to have public riots.
But
they like to keep people with tridents.
But at times, can they be a little bit extreme in their approaches to things? Absolutely. But I definitely will always speak highly of the ECA, as long as they do things that are worth speaking highly of. And advocating on my behalf as a gamer is definitely something I can stand behind. So that was one question. Then the other question was, what do we think about Duck Dodgers, the cartoon series?
Dodgers, the 24th and a half century!
And would we liken it to something like an Animaniacs, and where would we put that? So, first of all, Animaniacs, fucking awesomest cartoon series ever. Also, not designed for kids. All the jokes in Animaniacs.
Not true.
Were educated jokes.
Not true.
Yes, they were.
Some of their jokes or some of their skits were aimed towards slight education of children. Hello, all the nations of the world, the presidents and the states. No jokes that
hey,
were...
Hey, guess what? Guess what? All the nations of the world was to throw homage to They Might Be Giants and the Alphabet Song. Which, as I remember, they even had They Might Be Giants come in and record and be part of and tape for Animaniacs, as well as a couple of other songs.
Okay, fine. You win. Keep
and
going.
Guess what? They Might Be Giants, for the most part, educated adult band, although their albums for kids are awesome and also hilarious.
Going to bed.
But.
Bed.
But. But Animaniacs.
No, I would never have guessed that.
Totally.
Sun is a mass of doesn't guess.
Stop it. We don't want to get sued. I don't think the Johns would sue us, but still. Let's be careful. Come on. Stop it. I'm not gonna sing it. Stop it! Stop it.
Into healing. No. Temperatures of millions of degrees.
Oh my god. Okay, it's gonna be stuck in my head now. Stop it! Stop it! I know the sun is hot. Anyway.
I'll play some
Dodgers. Shut up! I have to answer the question.
Okay.
I'm trying to do my job, man. But Duck Dodgers. First of all, I'm a huge fan of the Warner Brothers cartoons. I think right now all of the DVD box sets that are out of the Looney Tunes collection, I have. I've watched just about everything and keep finding new jokes that I missed because I didn't either have the common knowledge for why it was funny or not. So Duck Dodgers was always one of my more favorite Looney Tunes bits. So the moment that I heard and actually saw the website where they announced that they were going to do Duck Dodgers as a series, I was like, hell to the yeah. Then I actually watched the episodes, and then I was like, double hells to the yeah. Duck Dodgers is so entertaining. I'm kind of disappointed that it's been relegated to the land of Boomerang, which a lot of people, unless you've got the ridiculous tier of cable, don't get. Because, I don't know, to me Boomerang is where good cartoons go to die.
Yeah.
Kind of like Nick at Night.
Sure.
As opposed to Nick and Nicktoons, it's like Nick at Night. It's where we put all the stuff that used to be good, but now only old people or people who just need TV on in the background as background noise.
The original Nick at Night that was on Saturdays had some of the cooler...
Yeah, and somehow it got turned into CBS at some point in time.
It did.
It's like programming for old people. Nick at Night. And that's what's happened with Boomerang. And I'm really sad to see Duck Dodgers... there. Initially when it ran on Cartoon Network, and it was funny as hell. But for me, they kind of did that thing that they always do when they want to kill stuff, is they kept moving its time slot. And when you don't create consistency, you can't create a fan base. And so I think it died prematurely, because it was funny as hell. So, yeah, me, big five thumbs up if I had additional hands.
Me love Dodgers long time.
I mean, it was hysterical. Just hysterical. And the way that they were able to use, you know, Yosemite Sam type characters and Marvin the Martian, and the way that they dealt with the Martian Queen and her introduction was great. And IQ. I mean, all of the characters I absolutely fell in love with. Daffy Duck was just, I think, the funniest really for me that I'd really seen him in a long time, because I hated the live action, if you can call it live action, Looney Tunes movies. Both of them. And yeah. Brendan Fraser really should be shot and not allowed to do any more of them. So yeah, Duck Dodgers, huge, hell to the fucking yeah on that.
Do you think Dr. Rogers was kind of like that first cobblestone that opened up the gateway for cartoons like Tiny Toon Adventures and Animaniacs and Freakazoid to come out and be cartoons but not be just typecast as a child's cartoon?
No, because Duck Dodgers came out after Tiny Toons and Animaniacs. So
there were
it was
a couple of episodes of Looney Tunes that were Duck Dodger cartoons.
Yeah, but I don't think that Duck Dodgers paved the way for Animaniacs. I would say that Looney Tunes, Merry Melodies, paved the way for Animaniacs. Because when you think about it, the majority of Animaniacs was a variety show. You had a couple of skits, kind of like Laugh-In, and you had a bunch of musical bits. They had Bernadette freaking Peters, for crying out loud.
Yes.
They did jokes based off of Fiddler, off of Phantom of the Opera, which there's no way that any six-year-old...
Was she Rita?
Yes. Did you just figure that out? Oh, Pookie.
I was like, I always loved Rita, and I don't understand why.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Now I get it!
And then her dog was based off of Rain Man.
Yes, I knew that.
Okay.
That was a giveaway.
Well, guess what? What six-year-olds you know saw that movie? So,
right. You
know, but Merry Melodies being a bunch of slapstick and skits and then some musical bits and bringing in the theater, I mean, with stuff like What's Opera Doc and that kind of thing, those paved the way for Animaniacs and, you know, Pinky and the Brain.
Oh,
and
I mean, referencing then, because I know she must have been referencing someone.
Who?
Slappy. Squirrel. From Animaniacs.
Slappy's girl didn't really do a whole lot of singing.
No, but I wonder who she referenced, because she totally did.
Oh, I'm not exactly sure, but I bet there's probably a page someplace that lists out all the characters and who they were referencing, but they're referencing bringing in somebody. I don't know, maybe Maude, I don't know. But I think that, you know, things that came before are what enabled your Tiny Toon Adventures and your Animaniacs to happen. I mean, you look at the staff that wrote Animaniacs, and it's just kind of clear. I mean, it's in the title. Steven Spielberg presents Animaniacs. And Freakazoid as well. Freakazoid was kind of after me, so I really didn't get into it. But again, that was on the same vein. And I think that those all stem from, and they all grow from, the foundation that was laid before, which is all of your Warner cartoons and your Fleischer Brothers Popeye cartoons that were a little bit more than just pretty little dancing drawings on the screen.
Okay.
Not to take anything away from Disney.
Right.
Because if you want to talk about substance in cartoons, even though Steamboat Willie has been credited with starting everything, you know, if you look at the current run of Disney series, Disney character-based cartoons, as far as funny goes, I don't think that there's any kind of comparison. I think that Warner kind of kicks Disney's ass all up and down the street on that.
The bam.
I mean, I love Goofy. I love Mickey. But if you look at, like, Goof Troop, and you put that up against Pinky and the Brain, even.
Yeah, good point.
Much more going on. Much more funny.
Yes, I can agree.
Mm.
Not that I liked Goof Troop, but yes, you're right. There was a lot more in context.
Well, if you take a look, like DuckTales. Love fucking DuckTales, okay?
Love DuckTales.
DuckTales, okay? I probably love DuckTales definitely more than Pinky and the Brain. I think Animaniacs just for me was just like it. So there are very few cartoons that like I put above Animaniacs. But
Wheel of Reality, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
Exactly.
And it was never anything actually really good on the Wheel of Morality.
Never anything good on the Wheel of Morality.
Just the irony.
Exactly. Always chew your peas. What? You know, so for me, I think that cartoons, especially the ones that I was privileged to grow up watching and the ones that stay with me, the ones that, here we go back to the parenting thing, if the children thing, you know, ever, those would be the things that I would share with my kids, because then they would wind up having the same sadistic little sense of humor, but also appreciation for witty jokes as well as fun with your sight gags.
To share them with my kids.
Oh, I'm going to spoil the shit out of your kids.
I know. My kids
are They're going to be so educated out their assholes. It's going to be ridiculous.
So much cooler than you, Mom. And I'm like, then be their kid. Be her kid.
I went over to Ani Ninjas, and she showed me this thing called Into the Woods. Oh, my God. Why didn't you ever show me theater?
It's like, I did.
Mommy, what's the Met, and why don't we go there?
It's like, talk to your father about that.
Anyway.
Just kidding. I take my kids to the Met.
I'm not going to get into my actual topic, because I think we've run a good amount of time. I didn't even get to it, but...
Sorry, okay?
I think that this was a good conversation. I'm so much happier about talking about cartoons that I absolutely love. And how they've actually influenced my sense of humor and comic timing.
Okay.
Which is phenomenal.
Yes, I believe that too. I think with a good solid foundation of cartoons with the really top-notch comedic performance is what made us the funny biatches we are today.
Well, and the thing is, if you really think about it, is that a lot of the Looney Tunes, because they were a Time Warner Company cartoons, they had all of the Warner Brothers stock. So when you think about some of those cartoons, for instance, like one of the ones that comes to mind right now is that Porky Pig one where he's got the hens that won't lay eggs. So he ends up hiring those two singing roosters to kind of swoon his hens into making eggs.
Yes.
Okay, well, those two crooners are based off of Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra. Both of whom had been, you know, in a bunch of different movies, and a lot of their funny cartoons with Bugs Bunny at the Copa featured caricatures of the big of the time actors. Like the one where he's avoiding being chopped up and put into a pie for Humphrey Bogart, but doesn't realize that Humphrey Bogart's the one that wants him to be in the rabbit pie for his girlfriend. You know, goes through and does the Carmen Miranda bit that we all know and love, all that kind of stuff. Well, that stuff was just all character and poking fun at themselves and at their own people. And what I think is really funny is that it ties into what you were talking about before in watching stuff on AMC and those actors that were those triple and quadruple threats. It was poking fun at all those people. Because if you think about it, you shouldn't know who Clark Gable is, really. But you do. Because of those caricatures of him in those cartoons with big ears and flying away with them. So, exactly. Exactly. So cartoons are huge. Animation is huge. It's always been huge. And I think that we just kind of forget that very easily in the West.
Yes. We need to stop forgetting. The country needs to start pretty much
remembering our history so we can learn from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So that's what we learned on this episode of the ESH podcast.
Yeah. Wait, what did we learn again?
I don't know. Spin the wheel of morality and see what pops up.
Spinning! We need to get one of those.
I think we might have to replace the Mic of a Thousand Truths with the Wheel of Morality. But...
wait, isn't it copyrighted? Can't we get sued?
Well, then we'll have to call it something else. Maybe we'll call it the Wheel of What We Should Learn. Because you can't the more you should know, because that's definitely service marked. Yeah. The Wheel of Knowledgeability.
Yeah, but it doesn't work as well as when we try to sing a song about it.
We'll find out something.
We'll work on it.
You know what? If you want to make a suggestion of what we should call our wheel, email us. Use the Hit Us Up link on our website, which is www.electricsisterhood.com. Or you can use the short address, which is...
ESH.mobi. That's ESH.mobi. The short address bounces you to the long one. You can check out any articles that we've written within the week, and you can comment on them thusly. Yes, I know I said thusly again. Deal with it. I like the word. It's my word of the week. It's the word of my life, actually.
I wish you had discussed it. I mean, discovered it.
I like discovering new words. Anyway.
Discovering new words is good, but...
You don't want to comment any of the articles. Let me finish my bit. If you don't want to talk to us that way, you could hit us up link and ask us a question directly. If you're not listening to us on iTunes, check there first. If you have a personal grudge against iTunes right now, you could put
What's your beef? Is this all like Tupac Biggie beef or what? I don't know.
If it's Tupac beef, everyone's going to see it and pretend like they didn't.
We just need to come together. No more of this beefing, y'all. One love.
Anyway.
Ninja.
if you're having a beef with iTunes, you can put us into any RSS reader. We'll pop up that way. You can put us in any podcast search engine imaginable in the interwebs, even in the corners. They aren't really corners because they're kind of tubes, so they're circular, so there's no corners.
It's a cylinder.
Yes, cylinder-esque.
Yes. The web and is based arabesque, on codes.
Really.
Wait, who's doing arabesques?
Anyway. And as the top finale, if you
You're going to put a cherry on it.
Yes, I'm going to put the cherry on it. And if you don't want to do any of those things, and you want to be a cool kid, like, you want to be that kid that everyone's like, hey, that kid.
We're not doing peer pressure here. That's not what we're about.
It's like, hey, kids, want to do some network? Like, I got some All Games Network right here.
All you got to do is go to allgames.com, and you can check out some amazing shows, like the ESH podcast, airing Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern-ish, 6 p.m. Pacific-ish. Sometimes we get bumped by some of the other shows running, like Super Happy Fun Time Show, or Dead Pixel Live, and Ultimate Quest, Fantastic Forum, the Chatterbox. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff going on over there.
A plethora
there. Evil Avatar.
And dorks alike.
I mean, it's just wonderful. So definitely...
We all come together.
I'm not gonna say a word. But definitely check out all the great entertainment and
we come together
forums and other things that I'm just ignoring you. Awesome on the allgames.com website, as well as stuff you can find on electricsisterhood.com. So with that said, I think it's time for Panda's medication. So I think I'm going to have to call this podcast toast.
It's toasty. You know what's really funny now that I think about it?
Oh, God. Didn't I tell you to stop thinking earlier?
No,
it wasn't really working for you.
What I think. I think it's funny that we end this show with toast, but there's someone in the community, his name's Toaster, and I love Toaster so much. Like, he is so awesome. Hi, Toaster! I'm thinking about you right now because I'm thinking about toast, and I don't know why I'm...
Oh, God. Okay, so she's Pandalicious, and
yeah,
I'm Ninja Sister. We're leaving now, and we're gonna sedate Panda. Bye, guys!